Hello, my name is Chip Lang, and you are listening to Total EM. As a quick reminder of who I am, I'm an emergency medicine PA practicing in rural Missouri, and I've been in the emergency medicine field for a little over a decade. As a result, I get to meet some awesome people, and that includes Sam Ireland and the rest of the Foam Frat crew, which I got to do a special interview with them, and that is what this podcast is all about. You can also find this on the Foam Frat side. If you are not familiar with Foam Frat, they provide tons of amazing content, and they have excellent podcasts that you should also check out that you can easily find through a number of places, including Apple Podcasts, just like you can find our stuff through Apple Podcasts. I hope you really enjoyed this. I am just going to let this play from here, and I'll talk to you next time.
Yeah, you tell me when you start recording, I'll hit the button too.
One. Well, let's do ready, set, go. All right.
Sounds good.
Ready, set, go.
You act like when you say one, two, three, do you go on three or go after three or go
See,
before
dude,
three?
I totally got rid of that. Like, especially when you're going to transfer a patient. I always feel like ready, set, go is the better way. And then the one, two, because nobody knows if you're like one, two, three, or if you're going to be like one, two, three, go. You know, it's, you never know what's coming next. But with the ready, set, go, you always know what's coming next.
And this is why they pay the big bucks, man.
this is basically why we have a podcast to discuss these, to discuss these types of things. But that's not the reason why we got together today. So for those of you who, I'm sure anybody who listens to Foam Frat probably knows about Total EM, but we have Chip Lang with us today from Practical Pocus and Total EM. And we got to talking. This has been like weeks in the making. We've been trying to make our schedules work. And unfortunately, Tyler wasn't able to make his schedule work with ours, but him and I will do a little pre and post. But yeah, we wanted to get you on to talk about this this EMS PA thing. And I purposefully didn't do any research or reading or listening on this prior to it. I saw some stirrings online. I saw some different posts from you. And I'm like, that's a really interesting subject. That's like a whole different level of care. So talk to me about this. What have you been doing with this whole PA role in EMS?
So this is something that I have taken as a passion as long as I've been in EMS and doing this. It's something that I knew I wanted to help develop and make a little more mainstream. And by no means am I the only one who's doing this. There are about a dozen people that I know who are almost all PAs who are doing the same thing, trying to help promote the profession as far as PAs go and to help better utilize us in a variety of settings that includes on the EMS side. And that is both like in the pre-hospital environment as well as doing that interfacility transfer side, because sometimes that becomes an issue too. But there are lots of different roles where PAs can help and balance. And the easiest way I describe this is that there are kind of three major roles where PAs are helpful. And by no means does this mean that paramedics could never do this. I think it's one of the things that right now, because of how laws exist, and I think that's one of the things that you wanted to talk about a little bit, right now with the way the laws are and with what currently exists in the United States, PAs can really help serve as either a transition point or as a model in some ways to what would come in the future between like community care paramedics and so on. The three big ones. One is the very low acuity patient, the person who call 911, ambulance crew comes, but it's something that did not need to go to the hospital in the first place, or maybe someone who would have better been served by primary care. Like I said, community care paramedics could do this, but there's a lot of variance and it's hard to really know what the standard is, as well as the reimbursement side. How do you bill for something like this? Mm-hmm. And PAs are able to bill for these types of things. So for example, someone who may have a minor laceration that does require wound repair, you could do that in the field because realistically in the hospital environment, the sterility is not that much different for what you need. The other concepts that would come up are people who are like minor illnesses, especially ones that are easy to have either minimal to no sort of point of care testing on, and someone who is overall very low risk. as well as maybe some people who are calling, and this is something that I did directly with one hospital that I was at before, was that we did home visits in the sense of that person thought they might need to come back to the hospital. I would go visit them at their home. I would do some basic studies at the bedside and between ultrasound as well as with like a Zoll monitor and see, okay, is this someone who really needs to be readmitted to the hospital or can they stay at home and maybe we need to adjust their treatment at home? Do we need to potentially increase their furosemide because their CHF exacerbation isn't well enough controlled at baseline? Or do they may have some persistent symptoms from their recent heart attack, but they have no new findings going on? Those are the types of things that, you know, the lower end priority patients where they may not necessarily benefit from going back to the hospital. And given that's a bit of a spectrum there, because we talked about someone who has truly a straightforward complaint to maybe some complaints that are a little more serious, but may not necessarily need to always go back to the emergency department. Because realistically, that's where most EMS agencies are going to take their patients, is to an emergency department for evaluation. And what this does is this helps not only keep in my area an ambulance that is out of service essentially for any other call or any other purpose for an hour or two, and now keeps them in service, allows for the PA to perform the functions that are needed, and is one less patient that local emergency department that doesn't have many beds to start with, be able to take care of other people and free up their services too. So that's one type of patient there, that lower acuity. Then we have higher acuity patients. These are the fun ones, you know, quote unquote, in a sense, the ones that we all really in the EMS side want to engage in. That's what makes our day. That's what gives us purpose. And we are able to do certain things that your typical, even critical care paramedics might not be able to do. And that would be certain advanced procedures. That could sometimes be certain types of line placements. So whether that's a central line or arterial line placement, that could be using certain medications in certain ways, being able to initiate other types of treatments. In some cases, that could be REBOA or thoracotomies. Lateral canthotomies. Sorry, that one like escapes my mind for just a second. Lateral canthotomies.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I don't know of a single paramedic program that teaches lateral canthotomies, but if you have someone in the field, that's a very time sensitive diagnosis and treatment. That's something that a PA could do. Obviously these are all situations where you have the appropriate training, of course, right? Just like anything else in life and in medicine. And then the third type is the medical direction type. Now, that could be someone who is both online or offline medical direction, as well as potentially serving as a medical director for an EMS agency. And that one is probably the one that has met the most resistance in some ways, because physicians kind of keep that on their own. But I'm finding more and more that in the rural and remote environments, like where I'm at, we only have a few medical directors for multiple EMS agencies. They're older, they're less involved. They need someone to really help elevate that EMS agency. And part of that is having a solid medical director that is willing to step up as well.
Those are really great reasons. So here's what I'm thinking the whole time that you're telling me about these different roles is, I guess, two things. The first thing is, as we push for more education on the EMS side, because not even all states require like an associate's degree yet, you know, and so there's a lot of paramedics out there with, you know, just the technical diploma and things like that. And if they want to move forward, you know, in other places around the world, if you want to be a paramedic, you need a bachelor's degree, or if you want to be a critical care paramedic, you know, you need to go get a master's degree. And so that's kind of the standard in a lot of places, but not here in America. So The first thing I was thinking of as you were talking about this, and even as I was kind of like mentally preparing for talking to you about this today, I was thinking, is PA the future continuing education route for EMS? So like with these programs, and let's say that like there's an EMS or there's a PA out there who wants to get more involved in EMS, I'm assuming that there would be some kind of, I don't know if there's an EMS fellowship, or if you just need emergency department training or ICU training, if you want to do that specific kind of stuff. Because when I think about PA school, I think about the rounding out of, like, you know, you go to all the different specialties and spend a little bit of time there, and it's a very rounded out education. But then would these, you know, if they were going to get involved in EMS, would they need some kind of fellowship or specialty training? Because, you know, I don't think PA school, you know, just fresh out of school, you're going to want to, you know how to run a ventilator or, you know, place an art line or, you know, do a thoracotomy or something like that. So is there some specialty subset training? I guess that's the first part of my question. Let me ask you that first. Is there some kind of like fellowship or specialty training that these EMS PAs would get that would qualify them to work on an ambulance?
So you were almost starting to ask the one that was going to really ruffle feathers here about like the continuum, and then you kind of like dived off for a second.
So I got a follow up question. I got a follow up question. So yeah, let's do this little part first, and then I got a follow up a little bit.
Okay, so to answer this question, this is something that has been developing over the last, I'd say, about decade for PAs. And that is the idea of fellowships and residencies. And those of you who are either PAs or physicians or nurse practitioners that are listening in on this, or maybe just the well-informed paramedic, you will know that there are certain emergency medicine organizations, they will leave it at that, that decided to raise a very controversial issue about, can you call PAs fellows and residents and stuff like that. So this has already created some issue. I will point out that the first EM PA residency fellowship type program is the same time that they started the first emergency medicine fellowship and residency type program for physicians. So with that little point aside, this has been something that's been building over the years, and more critical care or acute care type of residencies or fellowships, including emergency medicine, has been developed. And there are now also some cases where there are specific EMS fellowships for PAs. One of them is someone who I know actually in St. Louis by the name of David Wright, who he is doing an EMS fellowship as a PA versus a physician. It's still part of the physician program, but they allowed him to join in on it. I think that's great. I think those are the first steps that are really needed, because a lot of times PA programs mirror the physician programs. And that's really kind of how the whole education is designed in the first place, is to mirror many of the aspects, if not the same aspects, as a medical school or physician format. So there are programs that exist like that. Now, the real question becomes, does everyone need to go that route? Does everyone need to have that type of residency or fellowship background? I would argue not, as long as you had the appropriate background leading up to it. So many of us who are currently emergency medicine PAs who also dive into the EMS side, we have an EMS background. And usually this is an extended background. This isn't like, oh, I took an EMT course and now I'm good to go.
To get your patient contact hours, like just...
Yeah, exactly. You know. Exactly. These are people who have the love for it and have been engaged with it for some time. We're also the same type of people in general who have, for ease of reference here, like board certification. We call it CAQ, or Certificate of Advanced Qualification in Emergency Medicine. And so like I have my EMCAQ, I keep up with my EMS licensure, which is now less pertinent because of the law that I was able to get passed in Missouri, but it's still good to have overall. But yes, that's something that is evolving with time and is becoming more prevalent, but it is still something that is relatively new.
So what kind of stuff does that, like board certification, because I can imagine that being like part of it. If a state adopts, you know, an EMS PA, you can work on the, because it just to, for those people who need a little bit of background, I did listen to that one on the state laws in Missouri. So what Chip was involved with was that you don't have to hold an EMS licensure in order to practice as a PA on an ambulance. So from kind of what I understood when I listened to the podcast, it was that it used to be that you needed to either hold some kind of EMT or paramedic license, because those were the people who were licensed to work on the ambulance. So you had to be dual licensed and function as that provider. But now you can function as a PA without holding an additional licensure. Am I understanding that correctly?
So yes, with the additional point of, and this is the most important part, this is why it was such a big deal to create this new law and help simplify this and better address the issue directly. And the most important part is that before, say I'm an EMT that also has a PA license, I can only practice at the level of an EMT. So now with the Missouri law, with the law that was just recently changed and updated, is that PAs can now practice as PAs on the EMS side. Gotcha. So that was something that, yes, you can still have two licensures and stuff like that. But before it was, okay, I'm balancing a very delicate situation from before that if I don't do this correctly, I can get into a lot of trouble because I'm only practicing at the level of an EMT or paramedic license. Now it is, I have a PA license that is recognized that can be applied in the EMS setting.
That's interesting. Yeah, because that's how our state is with nurses. So let's say that a nurse decides to, you know, get trained to work on some type of ambulance, whether it be in the air, on the ground, whatever. When they sign their local credentialing agreement, it'll say that they are practicing at the level of fill in the blank EMS provider and has proved competency in these areas, but never exceeds. So there's no role to it. There's no role, I believe, unless you're a physician, there's no role to extend out that level of service that can be provided because it's capped at the level of the EMS service provider's level of EMS provider. So it has to meet the definition of, you know, so it would cap at, you know, critical care paramedic or something like that. So that's very interesting. So what did that allow you guys to do extra? Because that's kind of an interesting part. I'm sure a lot of people who are listening to this are thinking, you kind of mentioned that, you know, the more acute settings, you know, the thoracotomies and lateral canthotomies and stuff like that. Is that are the more like surgical procedures or REBOA and stuff like that? Is that what you see that practice kind of expanding into?
Part of it. The other important part is that, like you kind of alluded to, the physicians, they don't have to follow a protocol. And I know this is something that is very controversial in EMS right now. Is do paramedics necessarily need to follow a protocol, or can they, like other clinicians, be able to say, hey, I recognize that in this situation, that's not the best way to go. So right now, in many places across the country, you have to get on the phone or on the radio and talk to a physician and get that approval. As a PA, potentially, and this will depend a little bit state by state, so I give that little caveat in there. You can say, okay, I'm making clinical judgment here. This is my medical decision-making. This is the action that I'm going to do, and that's why. And so I do not have to follow a protocol specifically. It's still a good idea to follow protocols most of the time. That's not to knock against protocols, because there are certain algorithms and protocols that are incredibly helpful and can help relieve the cognitive burden that can be going on. But with that being said, there are definitely patients who I come across that the EMS agency was limited. Their paramedics were limited by their protocols versus what I would have done differently in the field. So that's another big component, is that I don't have to follow a specific protocol. Now, the way that that's usually worked out is that there are what are called either supervisory or collaborative agreements. And the wording is a little important as we're developing what's called optimal team practice, or OTP. And what that means for us is that we are working on ways to help improve the language to allow PAs to practice to the full extent possible that they are trained and capable of doing. So I work now with a collaborative agreement, meaning that my physician, my primary physician, we have basically some ideas as far as like what would be typical of me and what would be the normal things that I would do, as well as here are some things that, you know, would be expected. But the language tends to be very broad, because the idea is to avoid as much protocolization and as well as avoiding as much physician involvement that isn't necessary. So most of the time, there are still going to be certain times when your physician may want to stay in the loop, or you may want to have some kind of oversight, but making those as few and far in between as necessary based on the level of training, experience, and competency that's there.
So one of the things that I see that's most interesting about this is, because if this is designated, you know, somehow, you know, through a separate medical organization or whoever, and we start saying that we're going to start seeing these you know, EMS PAs or PAs and EMS out in the field, it's almost like a new level of care. And so is there going to be some kind of, in the future, because I know that this is, you know, in the beginning stages, do you foresee some kind of track program where people can, let's say a paramedic has some kind of, you know, maybe a bachelor's degree, they can transition into a specialty kind of PA school? Or do you picture that if, you know, if you're a paramedic, you just go through, you know, if let's say you want to become a PA in EMS, do you foresee them having to go through the exact same process as any other PA? In the future, I'm saying, you know, as these programs develop and maybe there does become this specialty, do you think it'll be the same track as PA has always been, where you go, you get your, you know, usually some kind of science degree, biology, chemistry, that kind of thing, go to PA school, get your master's degree, and then go into some kind of fellowship? Or do you think that there will eventually be some kind of transition program?
This is where I'm so glad you brought this up, but at the same time not, because this is where I'm going to piss off people.
I want to know, because I can honestly see, here's the thing, before we, because I'm going to tell you what I think before you give me the actual informed information. Okay. So I can see, I'm going to catch some flack for this, but don't hold my feet to the fire too much, because I haven't thought this through a terrible amount. But I think that you're going to have some people on one camp that say, well, the only thing I would want to do as a PA is emergency or critical care or work on the ambulance. And I have so much experience in that area already. Why can't I get some kind of licensure as a PA that says I can only do those things? Some kind of like emergency only PA where, you know, I don't go into OB and I don't do general care and I don't do this and I don't do that. But I think one of the benefits of talking to a physician, talking to a PA, is they've been through so many different specialties when they've been rounding on their clinicals. So they've done surgical, they've done OB, they've done, you know, geriatrics, they've done, you know, whatever else. And they get this super rounded impression of healthcare and see all these different things. And I think that that's one of the main things that's missing in our, you know, field of knowledge and our kind of scope of knowledge as EMS providers, is we spent all our clinical time mostly in ICU or EM or on the ambulance. And we didn't spend a ton of time doing these clinical rotations, rounding out other places. And so I feel like if there was some kind of specific EMS PA thing, like fast track from paramedic to PA, you know, I don't know. I feel like it wouldn't make a very rounded provider at the end. Is that kind of in alignment with what you were going to say, or am I actually off base?
Actually, almost perfectly. I would add a couple of things that I think would help better illustrate and kind of explain why a little bit more. And that would be that, like you said, we train in a lot of different specialties, which also means that we train across a wide variety of acuities. And we also see pathology in these specialties that normally won't always be present in the emergency medicine, critical care, or EMS worlds. And I can better anticipate what my colleagues will need in those other specialties, as well as being able to better recognize them because I've been in those other specialties. So that's something that really sticks out. And for example, I'll give you an example of one that I see all the time on the EMS side, is I have someone who presents with low back pain, which I'm not trying to, again, point anything bad to paramedics, because you could easily do the same with any other profession. But I get certain paramedics who come in and they say, well, we didn't do anything with this guy. He was just acting weak. He couldn't hold himself up. You know, I think he's just blowing smoke. So I didn't give him anything. I didn't do anything else. This guy
is hyperkalemic.
this guy, you'll be able to get out in no time. And then they present, and I mean, almost like a at the foot of the door assessment, I can realize that this person is describing catecholamine. And so I'm worried about catecholamine syndrome. And I'll bring that up to the medic. It's like, what do you think about this? And almost always they will have never heard of it before. And again, that is not a knock on the education specifically or that person's ability. It is that that's something that you don't necessarily see unless you've had this broader training. Same thing comes up with some of the other things that we'll see, like peritonsillar abscesses and knowing how to manage those, including knowing how to drain them. While it is something that is part of emergency medicine, it's more something that you find with ENT. And so having that knowledge base is also important. Generally, also in EMS, in the emergency department, in critical care, and I mentioned those because you talked about how those are usually where paramedics are getting their training, you're not doing a whole lot of OB. But OB is such a vital part that often gets missed or there's little exposure to it. I joke that I really know how to do a C-section better than a vaginal delivery because of all the C-sections that I did with OB. And so that's something that I feel more comfortable with. Am I necessarily saying that I'm going to do a C-section in the field? Maybe not necessarily, but a resuscitative hysterotomy is a real possibility. And that might be something that comes up. But that's something that I wouldn't feel comfortable with if I didn't have some sort of training first in OB and getting that background and knowledge. So that's part of it, that clinical side of it. The other part of it too is the type of depth and training that comes into play. And I cringe when I say this a little bit because I also know the PAs to physician that are having this issue of, well, why do I have to go through the entire training or most of the entire, the same training when we're doing most of the same things? It's true, but there's a little bit of difference in the training and mindset that occurs between that, just like there is for paramedic to PA. And one of the big things is getting a lot more of the physiology, pathophysiology, clinical medicine, a lot more pharmacology than what is brought up in paramedic school. Mm-hmm. Now, you and Tyler and the rest of the Foam Frat crew are like way above. I mean, there are things I learn from you guys all the time. So it's not that you're incapable of it. Quite the opposite. Fully capable of it. It's just that there's not the same level of formalized training there. And while Foam Frat does an amazing job picking that up and running with it, that's not what you're seeing across the board, which is one of the great things with PAs. It helps kind of create a new equal plane and level of training and experience and background.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I think that rounded out education is incredibly important. Even if it's not your passion, maybe going into it, if somebody decides that, hey, I want to go to PA school, I think that you might, and this is my own opinion, not having gone through PA school, you might find out that you really love something else, you know, and getting this rounded out education, you find out that I have more interest in this than I thought with that other thing. And so, I don't know, there's a fine line when you're a paramedic and you're talking about continuing education. I don't know if you've noticed the crap storm that's been Foam Frat has stirred multiple times online about paramedic education and things like that. But, you know, finally states are kind of starting to come on board with this associate's degree thing. And then will it ever get to a bachelor's degree here in the States? Will there ever be, you know, a master's in critical care like you see through like the University of Edinburgh or something like that, where PAs and NPs and paramedics and physicians can take it and things like that? I don't really know if that's going to be available. So the question in my mind really comes up, like, in EMS education advocacy, because Tyler and I just did our 100th podcast, and Ginger Locke, one of the questions that she had for us was, you know, what's next for Foam Frat? And she's like, what is, you know, is it just more of the same, more podcasts and blogs and things like that, and, you know, the course and stuff? And one of the things that we brought up was that, you know, we think that there's a role to be played in like EMS advocacy and advocacy for educational standards and things like that, and trying to progress the profession in that way. And it's tough to know what the right step is in that direction. And I'm admittedly ignorant on the right route to tell people to go right now, because with things like this, you know, it's in 5 years, this EMS PA thing could be a huge thing. And maybe that's going to be the level that people aspire to. And maybe that's the only path that's going to be available to clinicians to advance their clinical practice pre-hospital. People for a long time have talked about maybe there's going to be a paramedic practitioner or something like that. But it seems like PA school may be fulfilling that role already, and that might be the route that people need to take.
Yeah, this is something that is really tricky, and I think something that has really kind of been a little more challenging to address. And I'm just one guy. This is just my opinion on this. But I feel like one of the big things that comes up is, like you said, where is the future? And I don't have a TARDIS or a magic eight ball that's going to give me the right answer every time or anything like that. So instead, I'm going to have to just kind of go with what I see trend-wise. I think for the current world of EMS, when it comes to pay, it is very hard to properly reimburse a physician for their services in the field. I think that's just one of the reasons why it's easier to have a PA, or we haven't really talked about that much, or a nurse practitioner in that setting, because we tend to be a lower price point. We do most, if not all, the same things, depending on the program. And that is really beneficial. Also, something that we didn't talk about as much with the last question, but I'll tie in here, is that with PA training, I actually modified my rotations so that about half of my rotations were in emergency medicine or critical care. And so that's not something that is very easy to do, but I think for those who are looking at this from the emergency medicine mindset, whether they want to practice in the field or in the hospital, is something to consider, because there are ways of really doing that. And I learned so much in that time frame, and I was much more prepared diving straight into the emergency department and being able to use my training in the pre-hospital environment as well, compared to what I had before. So I think that's one really great benefit of PAs and with our training and background. But, you know, is it going to change over time? Could there be the paramedic practitioner, which I really think is in very many ways very similar to the goals of a PA and what's being done there, which is why I don't think that one's as strong of a future. And I could be totally wrong. I could be absolutely wrong here. I'm not saying that I'm 100% right. But also, I think it's very hard to have people go into becoming a physician, because A, there's a lot of cost and time behind it. And B, the other big thing is that it is a cost to the program, to that EMS agency. And then the final point that I'd make with that too is, when it comes to EMS, like, it's one of the great things I love about EMS is it's usually one patient at a time, or maybe just a couple of patients at a time. And you get to really, really manage the care in a level that's not seen in most other areas of medicine. But to that same vein, you also don't get as much exposure to procedures and stuff like that. Like, I would almost guarantee that I have intubated more times this year than 95%+ of paramedics out there. And that's just because in the emergency department, there's more volume and I see more patients, that I get more opportunities to do that. So most PAs, nurse practitioners, physicians who are practicing in EMS are not full-time. They have an emergency department that they are working with too, or a critical care setting, because they realize they need to keep up with the number of procedures necessary.
Here's another question. Who pays for this? Who hires an EMS PA? Let's say that Wisconsin adopts this tomorrow. Who do you foresee employing the EMS PAs? Because you guys can be more expensive than a paramedic. And so, how do they afford that? Does it come back in billing? Because they can bill now for procedures that the PA performs. Does that change the way that they bill that ambulance call? Or how does that work? Is there anything you can add to that? Like, who pays for this? Who hires an EMS PA?
So your question is actually one, it's the only thing I probably say I'd study up on before I did this, was because I wanted to reach out to my fellow EMS PAs and see what they're doing with their programs. Mostly, in most cases, they're being paid either by the hospital, because it's a hospital-based EMS agency. And so this is part of their time. So the hospital's footing the bill there. And it's the benefit of, yes, we've got this additional person out in the field. So sometimes it's just bragging rights thing and they may not be able to bill as much. Other agencies, it's more flight EMS, because with flight, there's generally more revenue that comes in. So it's easier to reimburse at what I would say would be the appropriate rate for a PA or nurse practitioner out in the field. So sometimes it's that. The one that I think is growing, and this is the one that's a little more challenging because there's not that much out there right now, but I think as more and more we're finding this with ground units, I really see your future is going to be more about the individual billing. like I said, the home visits can also be counted as one form of billing, but the individual procedures, the critical care time, all those things stack up. And by being able to bill for those individual things, I think you will see that there is reasonable benefit to where your agency is going to be making more money. And as a return, you'll be able to properly reimburse at the level that you need to retain someone long-term in that type of position.
Interesting. So are PAs going to replace paramedics in the future?
I really don't think so. I don't think that's something I'd
just because you're on an EMS podcast, man. You don't have to sugarcoat it, man. Are you putting us all out of a job or what?
You know, the docs think the same thing of me, so I guess I'll just take it. No, I really see this as being more of a tiered response, similar to what you see in other parts of the world. I spent time in the UK being with their EMS and HIMSS agencies, and I really appreciate the way that they have it, where not everything requires a paramedic, not everyone's going to require a physician in the field. So they have more of a tiered response. And I think that's one of the things that you're going to see more with how EMS expands over time. And I agree. I think degree programs for paramedics is a must in the future. How soon that happens, I think, is going to be dependent on variables that are well outside of my control, at least at this point, because I have very little say on any of this. But I really see PAs being used as your highest, or if you have physicians, the program's second highest level of tiered response, where it's going to be more of a pick and choose situation. They're not going to be going to every call, A, because of the cost behind it, but B, just resource-wise. I mean, it's just really hard to get that many people available to do that. I just don't see that as being something that's going to happen, at least anywhere in the near future, at least the next decade plus at minimum.
Yeah, you hear a lot of talk about skill dilution, and that reminds me of like what you're talking about right now, where there's so many paramedic units just all over the place, or not even, and when I say units, that could include like helicopters as well, where there's just an oversaturated market of paramedics, or it could be, you know, combo nurse medic team, medic whatever, and there's so many calls, or there's so many providers, and you know, relatively few calls, that there's all this skill dilution going on because there's so many paramedics around. And you know, so some people have said that, well, systems that use more, you know, BLS, basic life support, and then retain the ALS for more serious calls, at least those providers don't get that skill dilution. And I, you know, I'm not a logistical person, you know, at least at that level of things, but that seems to make sense to me, that more tiered response. It seems to make sense because skill dilution is a real thing.
Absolutely, I would agree with that. Yeah. And I that's part of the reason why you see more and more that you're going to have people who are practicing in multiple specialties or multiple departments. Most PAs and physicians who are in the emergency department are practicing at more than one department, because I did this for a long time. I was working at a higher level center because I wanted to be able to see some of the more sick patients that we would see on fewer occasions in my rural center, but I did less procedures up there. I actually did more procedures in the rural setting because there weren't other people who would step in and do it for me. Mm-hmm. So there is a balance there. And I think that's one of the things that you'll see over time, is that as PAs are more involved in EMS, I think you're going to see that quite a few are going to keep up their credentials and stay in the emergency department as much as anything, because they need to keep up that skill, because there is only so many procedures that you'll be able to perform in the field at any point in time.
All right, best guess. How long until every state in America has PAs working on their ambulances?
Ooh. So remember I said I don't have a TARDIS, so I can't find this out exactly, but...
Best guess. You're best the most guess. Informed people person I know, so you should have an answer.
I'd say it's going to be a couple of decades. I think so. And the reason why I say that is because PA legislation has been a little slow to change. And part of that is because we're a smaller body than others. We have less funds and less resources, so it's harder to devote the time to that. The other thing is that if you're going to count all 50 states, while some states are more progressive, there are going to be those that have honestly only recently in the last few years have full prescriptive rights. So if it took 50 years to get there, mm-hmm. 20 years for EMS, I think is not completely unreasonable for every place. Now, are you going to find pockets where you're going to see it more? Absolutely. And I think that can happen as little as a few years. But to have full across the board incorporation, I really think it's going to take a couple of decades to get to that point.
Do you know how many states right now are doing it?
So that was another thing that has been a project and part of our committee that is focused on EMS. And honestly, there's not a very solid answer because the laws are written in different ways across different states. So it's hard to track that down. But I want to say, and I may be totally off here, but I want to say it's about 10 states right now that have some form of legislation in place regarding PAs in the pre-hospital setting.
Nice. Well, that's quite a bit so far, man.
I know, only 40 more to go. It's like one every other year, and a couple of year, we're good.
Yeah, dude. That actually seems, I didn't think you were going to say that many. So I don't know if I can think of too many other questions to ask you about this EMS PA stuff right now, but I did, before we came on here, I did put a post up on Facebook and I want to check those messages. Right now, I got some comments on here.
And while you're checking that out, real quick, I do want to add one other important thing is that as of a few years ago, PAs are recognized by CAMS. Because I know that's something that has been an issue in the past. And actually how PAs got kicked out of EMS for a while was because with some changes in policies and stuff, CAMS accidentally left out PAs when they did an update, which is kind of almost what happened with Missouri. It wasn't that they didn't want PAs. It's just that the legislation for EMS in Missouri is older than PAs in Missouri. And so that's why we were left out of it. So my job was to get that back into the legislation and get that back onto our state statutes. But CAMS does approve PAs on the helicopter. So it's one of the things that, you know, if there's anyone out there who's listening who may have run across that issue, yes, you can still be CAMS certified and still have PAs on your service.
Awesome. That's a really good point to bring up. Okay. I'm looking at the post right now. Tyler wants to know if you'll even fit in an ambulance. You know what? That's something to bring up. Chip, how tall are you?
So I'm 6'6". My wife always says I'm 6'7", but I don't think I've ever hit the 6'7" mark, but I am 6'6" at least.
You look even taller than that because you were one of the people, like, you talk to people over, you know, like Twitter or whatever. And I have to say, you were the person that I was just about most surprised to meet because I don't know why I pictured you being like about my height. I'm like 5'11". And then, dude, you just towered over me. And I'm like, holy crap, dude, Chip is huge.
Yeah, most of you guys
fit
are
in
short.
An ambulance? Man, you must have like really rung your bell a few times.
Oh God, so many times. I do fit in the ambulance, but it's in a preferably seated position. This is one of the, probably one of the silliest things, but is maybe the biggest thing that has me concerned with flight is it's not about the helicopter crashing. It's me walking up to the helicopter and getting my head chopped off by the rotor blade. Honestly, because I am so tall. And then I see these like flight medics and nurses who are as tall as I am. I'm like, well, they still have their heads, so it's probably going to be safe.
Until the wind comes, man.
Yeah, exactly. So that's honestly like my bigger concern. Although I do fit in the back of a helicopter too, most helicopters.
So most of the questions on here were about the stuff we mostly talked about. Curious what role it would be, 911 response, treat and release. We talked about that kind of stuff. And then would there be traditional, you know, would you have to go to traditional schooling? As we kind of talked about the fellowship and, you know, the history in EM. My friend Ben Siski thinks we're talking about Pennsylvania EMS when we say PA EMS, and nobody got his humor and somebody corrected him with it, which is hilarious. specific training for PA. I think we covered most people's questions. I'm actually just going to check the foam frat page to make sure that we're not missing anything over on there. Anything you can think to add before we get out of here?
I think one thing, just so people have a better understanding and that they don't have to dive into this somewhere else, but when it comes to PA training, because we alluded to this a little bit, PAs, it's a requirement that you have a bachelor's degree at least when you come in. Now that bachelor's degree can be in almost anything as long as you fill the prerequisite requirements, which usually requires some psychology, anatomy and physiology, chemistry, usually including general and organic chemistry, and then some general kind of basic bio. Usually also statistics is another big one because it is very important to do that. And that's one of the big things with PAs, I think, that gets kind of glossed over is There's a lot of emphasis on evidence-based medicine and really being able to properly critique things, which is why I enjoy going through articles and critiquing them, because I feel like I actually took something away from that class. And so usually with PAs, you have to have those prerequisites. You apply for a program, and then it's about a year-long process, just like it is for getting into med school. Once you get in, your first year is didactic training. So that is usually a mix of clinical medicine, pharmacology, diagnostics, therapeutics, so being able to do different procedures. And then you have other kind of courses that are sprinkled in as well, such as genetics, ethics, statistics, and kind of a whole variety of things. Also, most but not all programs have gross anatomy, meaning that we actually have cadaver-based anatomy and dissection versus using model-based, which is a pretty big deal because you get a much better understanding of the anatomy when you can have a cadaver that you can work off of there. And then after you fulfill your didactic, your classroom year, you then go into your clinical rotations, which is usually about another year. Now, given some programs take as long as 3 years to go through, so sometimes they spread it out a little bit, but in general, you do about a year's worth of clinicals, which means that you're practicing in the different environments, the different specialties. And that's at least 2,000 hours of exposure and training there. Usually it's actually more than that. It gets closer to about 2,500 or so. Fun fact, residencies, like, you know how residents are limited to 80 hours before they, you know, because they can't do more than that. PA students don't have that same stipulation. So there was my trauma surgery service, and we did up to 100 hours in a single week.
Wow.
Yeah, which, I mean, I learned a lot about trauma surgery really quickly there, but I was also tired as hell all the time.
Yeah, I bet.
So there are those types of things that are worth knowing. And then the other thing I'd point out with this is some people say, well, obviously that's shorter training, so it's not nearly the same as physician. And there are given some differences, and it does vary by program. But NYU Bellevue, last time I checked, they had their PA program and their medical school program where you could pull them up side by side and look at them. Besides one class that was all about like research-based medicine, not evidence-based, but like actually performing research in medicine, the entire program, the lengths of times in those topics and everything for the didactic training was exactly the same in the NYU Bellevue program. The difference was the number of breaks. PA school, usually you have little to no breaks. Generally with the med school program, they had summers off and stuff like that. The little bit of difference that does come up is the amount of time in the clinical year, as well as the fact that they require residencies versus PAs. We don't have that residency requirement yet, although that's becoming more and more common.
Gotcha. Well, thanks for giving us that overview. And this was a really interesting discussion. I'm super interested to see where this goes and if you have more updates on this as it continues to develop and we learn more about how this integration is going to happen. I'd love to have you back on. Hopefully we can get Tyler on here to ask you some questions about it and stuff. And I'm not the first. I'm just the first to say on the Phone for App podcast, we welcome you EMS PAs into EMS with open arms. We're not threatened. We want to work with you, Chip. We want to work with you.
I love that. I'll take that. And you know what? I am so happy with that I am going to give your Phone for App listeners a special discount with Practical Pocus.
Do it.
So I'll tie that in. We'll put that in the show notes site as well. But we do have a live course that's coming up, but obviously we have very limited settings there just because we're trying to be very safe with the pandemic. But we have lots of online classes, and those price points are about to jump October 1st. But I love the Phone for App people, and I want to be able to make sure that you guys get great training. So I'll include a discount for you all so we can get that done. And I'm sure the discount code will be Phone for App.
Awesome. Love it, dude. So I'll put that in the show notes, and I'll put your contact info down there, how people can check out Practical Pocus and Total EM. You want to give us the Phone for App tagline before we get out of here?
You don't have one, you jackass. Tyler tried that last time.
Did he? Oh, shoot. You know what? We got some of the same stupid jokes.
I will give you the total EM one. I will give you the total EM one.
Give us the total EM one, but you got to change it to foam fret. Change it to something foam fret. Can I put you on the spot?
Yeah, well, total EM is until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere. So I guess until next time, continue to foam fret it up.
I love it. We're going to put that one, I love it, but we're going to put that one in the maybe pile. We'll see if it shows up on the next episode.